Well, welcome everybody. Thank you for coming to our Citizens Involvement Committee. We have a pretty full schedule, so we're going to probably jump around a little bit. We're going to give some deference to our friends at Metro RTA since they so graciously agreed to join us.
Happy to be here.
Keep lying. So first thing I'd like to do is just do introductions, just so we all at least have a familiarity with each other. I'm Curtis Baker. I'm the director of AMATS. Daryl, you want to?
Daryl Kleinenz, planner with AMATS.
Fred Wise, bike advocate. What is it? Summit Cycling Center.
Ron Brubaker, task force, bike advocacy group.
Phil CP, task force.
Emily Barson, Metro.
Valerie Shea, Metro.
Bill Mackey, citizen representing cars and trucks.
Citizen extraordinaire.
We're so multimodal.
Chuck Gardner and that staff.
Well, again, welcome everyone, and thanks for taking the time. So the first thing we want to jump into today is our project funding that we did receive. If you take a look at the packets, Bill, I see you don't have one. Fred, you don't have one. Where are those packets?
Go back there.
Back there.
Oh, let's see how that come in. Get no one.
Right.
I got one. Thank you.
If you take a look at the packet and specifically look at attachment 5A, I just want to take some time on this because this is really the bread and butter of AMATS. This is where we select projects. We're usually looking out in 2024 right now, 2025, maybe 2023, depending on the schedule. And if you look through, you'll see on the 11 by 17 sheets are projects that were applied for each one of our funding categories. So on the first sheet is our STBG. That is our most flexible of all roadway funding. It can pretty much be used for anything. You see that we received 20 projects totaling about $57 million. Unfortunately, our approximate funding for that we have estimated right now is $8 million, so there's going to be a lot of unhappy campers when it comes to the STBG program. On that, I would point out the two biggest projects are North Main Street here in Akron, from the All-America Bridge north to the Corp Line, so basically all the North Hill neighborhood in Akron. Second funding project is Kent and East Main Street right by the university, so East Main pretty much along the whole northern part of the campus. They're looking at doing some really innovative things there to be more multimodal. If anyone's familiar with that area, it's kind of a very wide, crummy stretch of roadway. This is going to be a boulevard, allow narrower lanes, roundabouts, things for to really give a nice front-facing campus as well as a much nicer-looking road. Going down the list, you can see the other communities which did apply, and unfortunately, the further we get down the list, the more likely it will not be funded. Shout out to Metro RTA there at number 20. So.
Maybe we should look at our funding criteria.
So, and actually, for the Metro RTA project, that project, because it does not score through our funding criteria, which is more roadway based, that will be discussed by the TAC tip of what to do with that. So, it doesn't mean it.
Does the Amazon thing?
No, because actually, the Romig Road project that's going on right now is funded through OPWC funds from the state to Akron, so they were able to fund that fully without any
right.
So, if you turn the page, the resurfacing program, this is our most popular program. We have had about 29 applications, total request of $13,500,000. The good news is I think we're going to be able to help a lot of communities with sections of pavement here. We did change our scoring criteria this time around to focus on giving communities additional points if they were doing preventative maintenance. So you'll see where the maintenance performed, they get points for crack sealing, patching, strip paving, etc. Because what we're trying to do is ensure that these communities are actually keep taking care of their roads and getting away from that doing the worst first, because sometimes the communities wait too long to get their roads resurfaced. It's actually, you know, really not the right treatment at that point. It needs to be, there's certain levels of its base that need to be repaired, et cetera, that the resurfacing program's not really meant to cover. So you can see the projects there. And then finally, which I'm sure a lot of people will find interesting, is our CASA funding, which is the Transportation Alternative Set-Aside Funding Program. We're estimating about $2 million there. The first leg of the Rubber City Heritage Trail from Goodyear, basically, to Exchange in the Arlington area, scored highest. And second was Stowe and Silver Lake and Cuyahoga Falls Bike Connector, which is basically hopefully going to utilize Metro RTA track right-of-way. That there will also be getting funding, so you can get ready for some meetings with Stowe. And then most likely we are going to be able to fund the Cleveland-Massillon Sidewalk Project just in the Montrose area. We just finished and we had a ribbon cutting for a sidewalk on State Route 18 through Montrose on the north side, on the Bath side. This is a second piece of that. I think, and I don't know, Valerie, you can even speak to this probably from Metro's perspective, but there is something to be said about, like, it, with the project that we did fund already, you know, it was basically buses were dropping people off in a grass median, rain, snow, shine, whatever, and even though the sidewalk that we built isn't perfect, you know, it doesn't make it easy to get to the Acme necessarily, I feel like at least it's that first step, and it was like, it was cool to see it be put in where there was nothing before, and now you're trying to build a network that so people can kind of get around there a little bit easier than they have been in the past, and so I think this is a good kind of second phase of that project.
Yeah, we also actually worked with the county and the township to add landing pads where the bus is letting people off, so if they're not letting them off in the tree line, there's a concrete path to the sidewalk.
Yeah, so very cool. I told some people and even staff, we talked about this, the TAS is the project or the project listing where really we like a lot of these trails. There's a lot of really good trail projects on here. Unfortunately, there's just not a whole lot of money available. So it's sort of one thing at a time. I don't think there were any that we wouldn't fund if we didn't have the opportunity to. It's just... unfortunately, the TASA funding is our most limited program. With that, though, I would be now, I guess, on the scheduling side. So we will take this to our committees, our subcommittee in October, where we'll kind of hash out the details of how many projects we're actually going to fund and which ones they are, and then come back to our committees in December looking for final approval and funding award. So with that, are there any questions?
There was some legislation just introduced at Cuyahoga Falls about the connector trail. I don't know what it was.
Really?
It was on the, I saw it on the screen. I was wondering what it was, and I assume it's just...
You're talking about the high bridge?
No, or the one that's disappeared here.
Oh, the one that we'll be funding?
Yeah. Maybe it was to accept
funding. Cuyahoga Falls has a few hundred feet.
Okay, so they do have a... They did legislation. Well, that's good. Yeah, so that one looks like it should be a go. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, I guess with that, we're going to skip over to the Metro RTA presentation. Do you have everything you need?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Curtis.
So I'm going to take a nap. Wake me up when it's done.
You know what, Curtis? A little positivity wouldn't kill you every once in a while.
Yeah. It won't be in a minute.
Okay, well, again, I'm Valerie Shea, Director of Planning and Strategic Development at Metro RTA. So thank you to AMATS for asking us to be here today to give an update on some of our
upcoming initiatives and strategic planning that we are doing, and we want to make sure that everybody is informed of where Metro's heads at, basically, right now, and where we plan on going in the future. So this is, again, Emily Varson, our senior planner, and we're just going to walk through a few slides for you. We'll try to keep it short and sweet, but feel free to ask any questions. Maybe we'll save questions for the end, because we are going to cover a lot of topics, but we'll be happy to answer them. So these are what we're going to talk about today, all of the different strategic initiatives we have going on, starting with our strategic plan, which we'll be kicking off with an RFP here in the very near future. Hopefully wrap that up in the late spring, early summer of 2020. We're going to talk about our thoughts on our high ridership and high frequency corridors and how we can expand that service in more urban areas of our service area in Summit County. And then we're also going to talk about a FlexRide pilot program, which is an initiative that we are testing out beginning early 2020 on a different way, a different mobility option to provide in some of the more suburban areas of the county. And then update you on Tri-Transit Week and mobile ticketing. Turn it over to Emily to talk about strategic plan.
Bring this down a little bit. So as Valerie mentioned, we're going to be very, very soon going out for getting a consultant to support our efforts on a strategic plan. Basically trying to get an understanding of where we are today, kind of doing an overall market analysis and a state of the system, which will include an onboard survey. We are required to do that every 5 years, I was going to say 6, 5 years, to actually get a feel for the demographics of our system, who's riding, where they're going. That's something that we report to the FTA. But in addition to that, that information will give us that baseline understanding of our passengers and the types of patterns that they are exhibiting on their daily trips. We'll look at the trends and analysis of where people are going and what they wish. Even I think part of our survey actually will include from our actual riders places they want to get to but they can't. That's something that generally comes out of this. And then looking beyond that, so once we kind of get the state of our system, we'll look at the financial situation of our agency and where we can go and how we can expand, and then look at how we compare to other systems of like size and like characteristics. From all that kind of where we are, state of the system, we'll identify our trends, gaps, and then look forward to where we need to develop service in different types of service offerings. Right now. Sure. Okay. So one of the main components is trying to figure out the types of service. So as we look forward, we know that we have to think outside the bus. We've been using that a lot. That the way we've done things for 50 years, because this is our 50th anniversary, if you all don't know that, we are actually celebrating that this year. We're looking at how do we become the transit agency of the future. So looking at areas of our county where it makes sense, and probably more of the urban areas like Val said earlier, but where we intensify our service. So we actually are able to provide more frequent trips, so it becomes less of a, you know, someone having to understand a schedule and, you know, how to get the bus, that there's a bus coming, you know, every 10 minutes or so. And with that, we'll look at a system or service type called bus rapid transit, which looks at a more rail-like service using buses. So it's a lot of cities, similar size, like where I came from, in Omaha, we actually were developing a bus rapid transit line on one of our highest use corridors in the city. So we'll look at doing that in several corridors in our system over the next, I would say, several years, longer term, eventually. Yeah, they're looking at where we can do that. And then also looking at more of the flexible mobility opportunities, like what Val will talk about in a minute with our FlexRide service. So with that, of course, we're going to need to understand what we need to do it. So buses and looking at the different types of capital needs, including potentially facilities and expanding our service, you know, putting that together in a long-range plan that gives us the opportunity to actually be very purposeful in outlining and in bringing new service online. So we hope that at the end of this process, we will have a specific action matrix so that we can actually move forward purposefully. So looking at what we like to call STAR, we're looking at how do we align our resources on key corridors. And these are representative. They're not along a specific roadway at this point in time, but looking at the connections throughout our region. So not just specifically, I mean, we are service providers in Summit County, but we're looking at how do we actually provide service to connect parts of our region that may be outside of our service area. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we serve those areas, but we actually connect to service and engage with our partners to provide better access for residents of Summit County. So again, if we look at the purple lines, those are probably areas within our service area, and then kind of the dashed lines are potentially connections north, south, east, and west. If you all have not heard of Bus Rapid Transit, this just gives you a quick overview of some of the key components of Bus Rapid Transit. We are looking at elements that help us discern our bus line from a plain Jane bus line, not that there's anything wrong with a plain Jane bus line, but looking at a way to enhance our service and upgrade our actual delivery for our passengers. In many ways, it's more cost effective, limited stops, and it's higher frequency. So again, passengers don't necessarily have to look at a schedule, they just know that a bus is coming every 10 minutes or so. And looking at stations that are actually more like a rail station, may even have level boarding, so that it becomes more of a permanent fixture and it gives that presence and permanence. And giving that reliability of travel time is really key. We all know that a variation of 5 minutes in our travel time really does make an impact to our ability to get to work, live, and play in this community. So that's kind of the highlight overview of Bus Rapid Transit. A lot more that hopefully we'll be able to share with you over the next year or so as we develop our plans. Flex ride conversation.
All right, so FlexRide, again, as I mentioned, this is, Emily just talked about the bus rapid transit in our high-frequency corridors. That's not going to work in our whole service area and some of the more spread out, less dense areas. We have to rethink how we're providing service. So FlexRide is our first response and pilot to that. And it's a flexible demand response service. We were lucky enough to be awarded the Paradox Prize through the Fund for Economic Future and other funding partners. So we got some funding through that to support, along with our local operating dollars, this service. So essentially, an employer who identifies the need, they have a great candidate, but that candidate does not have the ability to get to work because transportation is a barrier for them. Maybe the bus service that's there, they could get to work on the bus, but it'll take them 2.5 hours each way to get there, or maybe there's not bus service at all. So we're targeting the job hubs in the northeast portion of our county for this pilot. An employer would identify a candidate, enroll in the program, and enroll that candidate in the program, and that person would get picked up either from their home or our downtown transit center and taken to the door of their employer. So we're in the development stages of this right now, still hashing out all the details both internally and with our partners at Connexus and with our employers. Connexus NEO, in case you guys don't know, is a workforce development agency that's doing a lot of great work right now and has a lot of relationships with manufacturing, healthcare, tech sector partners throughout the county. So we are definitely enlisting their help in this process. So that'll be a two-year pilot. And the real goal of that pilot is, at the end of it, to understand not only what the trips that are being taken are, but also what the value that provides to the employers, so that we can prove and tell the story, basically, and make the case for longer-term partnerships with employers to have a sustainable funding source for this more door-to-door service that is more resource-intensive but maybe meets the needs a little better. Just an overview, on the left is where the jobs are in Summit County. On the right is where our car-free households are who might be dependent on transit to get to work. So you can see that, yes, we have existing transit service that covers all of those job areas. I highlighted a couple of the job hubs in Cuyahoga Falls and Stowe that we're starting up with this pilot. But you can see you might have to transfer routes, or it might be a kind of convoluted way, I will say that, to get to your job. So it's not the most convenient option. So we're looking at FlexRide as a way to kind of break down that barrier. So again, we're thinking outside the bus. We understand that the big 40-foot buses, while they're great and they really serve their purposes in the areas of density, might not be the solution everywhere. But we've always done it that way. It is not something that's in our vocabulary anymore. So, some fun and exciting things we have going on. We also, you know, one thing about public transportation, and this is not just an Akron thing, this is an everywhere thing, is sometimes there can be a perception of, I'm never going to get on the bus because I have no idea how to pay to get on the bus, and that is just a barrier that I can't overcome because I'm not going to go figure it out. I don't know if I have to have cash or I have to have exact change. So what we're doing is a tri-transit week to try to get out of some of those stereotypes, get people out of their comfort zone, teach people how to ride the bus, and provide some incentives for them to do that. So Tri-Transit Week is the week of October 14th, and we have something fun going on every day. So on Monday the 14th, we are actually rolling out a mobile ticketing app called Easy Fare, which I'll talk about more and give you a couple screenshots of in a second. So with that, you'll be able to sign up, put a credit card in, or put a debit card in, and pay for your fare on your phone and show the operator on their phone when you get on the bus that you have your ticket, and you just sit right down. You don't have to interact with the fare box at all. So that's another great thing. And then on Tuesday, we partnered with the Devil Strip to do an event where if you're an employee working downtown, you hop on a Dash, which is our free downtown trolley service, and take it to lunch. There's many restaurants downtown. Most of them are accessible with the Dash, so we're doing some cross-promotion with the Devil Strip on that. Similarly, I'll jump to Thursday. We're doing the same type of thing, but with happy hour in the evening. So if that floats your boat a little more, I would encourage you to try that out too. And then on Wednesday, this is in partnership with Connexus and our FlexRide program as well. We're actually going to be hosting a job fair at the Transit Center. Wednesday is also free fare day. So if any of our customers are looking for a job, they'll be able to come down to the Transit Center. We're going to be targeting employers to be there that are within walking distance of a bus route or within these pilot areas for FlexRide so that they can identify candidates that are already used to riding transit or might be able to use the FlexRide program to get to work. So we're really excited about that job fair. It'll probably be the first of a few that we host in partnership with Connexus. And then jumping back to Friday, we are also rolling out a new system, a paper system app, and also a PDF that will be online. So we're really excited about that. We haven't had that since we moved from Main Street down to the Transit Center. And also just the route-by-route paper schedules, we'll have a new format and design with an updated map on that to provide a little more detailed information. So those will be rolling out that Friday. The new you'll be able to see what the new schedules will look like that Friday, but they won't be available until the January sign-up. Okay, so Easy Fare. Easy Fare is the mobile ticketing app. These are just some screenshots from my phone of what it looks like. So the great thing about Easy Fare is it was started through a group called NeoRide, which is a council of governments of many different transit agencies throughout Ohio. It's expanded outside of Northeast Ohio at this point. So all of these agencies, plus a few more that will be added come October, are available on the app, and you can download one app and buy tickets for any of these agencies that are listed. There's Cincinnati and actually Tank in Northern Kentucky will also be a part of this as well, and Sandusky. So we're expanding every day. There's a lot of interest. And so you'll basically just open the app, tap on the agency that you're riding. Once you've bought a ticket, you will, oh, and I put these in the wrong order. So it'll look like on the right. And then when you're ready to get on the bus, you just hit activate ticket. It'll be activated for a half an hour, and it'll look like the photo on the left. And it actually will, the time and date moves back and forth across the screen, and there's some color changing that happens, so there's a lot of security features built in, so you can't just screenshot or take a video and show our operators. They've all been trained on how to identify a valid ticket. So that's very exciting. You don't have to have the right cash on, but, you know, exact change on you. You can just have a bunch of tickets in your phone and activate it when you get on the bus and sit down and move on. So we're really excited to roll this out as an option. We are piloting this right now with our commuter passengers, and on our highest usage day, we're seeing about 28% to 30% of the fares are being paid with mobile ticketing. So it probably won't be quite that high when we roll it out with all of our ticket types, but we are excited to provide this option to our customers. And that is all we have, so happy to take any questions or feedback you guys might have for us. Thanks for having us.
This Dash thing, you have to buy a ticket to take the bus down to a restaurant?
Nope. So Dash is always free. It runs every day during the week from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's every 10 minutes. After that, it's 15 minutes until 11 p.m. And that's totally free. So the purple bus, you can just get on any day for free and take you there. So we're just promoting it and encouraging people to do it that day just to get used to the service.
Are the restaurants supporting this, putting up signs for it?
I'm not positive on that. I would assume our marketing department is all over that. That's not a question I ask them.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Emily, as a Hudson resident yourself, you obviously understand the importance of Route 104. And I was just wondering if you could just, confirm Metro's commitment, especially to that stop right in front of Perkins that
yes.
I like to use.
Yeah. Right in front of your house, you mean?
Yeah. Okay, that's just wanted that on the record.
Emily might slap a Metro sticker on her car and pick you up at that stop every day. We are looking at the system as a whole and making sure that we provide coverage across the county, but maybe it might not always be with the traditional bus service in the future.
Except for 104.
Yeah, except for 104. Sure,
Perkins.
Sure. When we get that SCDG funding, we'll be happy to make sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So with regards to 104, I also live on 104 route, and I see it go by quite often with one person or nobody. You mentioned the downsizing buses. Is that a candidate for smaller buses?
It's a candidate for looking at how we provide service there. So, and this is not anything, again, we haven't even gotten through our strategic plan yet, but one type of service that could be provided maybe Route 8 or 91 serves as kind of a trunk line or a feeder that has more frequent service. And then there's the smaller vehicles that are picking people up throughout and taking them to different points on that feeder service. Just an option. That's something that's been piloted other places too. So yeah, it might not be the big 40-foot bus that's traveling up and down that whole route and kind of going and hitting all the jobs, but we are a Summit County agency and committed to figuring out how to provide that service efficiently and meeting the needs as well.
What would the personalized service, the one you were talking about for going, picking up employees and doing that, what would that look like? What would a pilot program look like? Is that
Sure, yeah. So what we're thinking right now is if you are an employer who's interested in the program, for the pilot, the employer is actually going to cover a part of the fares for riding. So that would be an employer cost, a benefit of being an employee of that company if you're signed up in the program. So you enroll, say, you start working at ABC Company, you didn't have a way to get to work, you're enrolled in the Flex Ride program. You would schedule your trips. We have an app that we're rolling out for that where you would schedule your trip. A smaller bus, we have our paratransit vehicles, which are smaller, and these new purple vans that you'll see out on the street would come pick you up at your house. You might, depending on who else is enrolled in the program, pick up a couple of the people that are in your neighborhood going in your same general vicinity at your shift time, and you would get to work, make sure we get you to work on time, and it would drop you off right at the front door. Because what we see a lot is with these job hubs that are in the more suburban areas talking about the importance of sidewalk, we might get you within 3/4 of a mile of your job, which is walkable for most, but not necessarily the best walk when there's not a sidewalk and it's the winter time or it's raining or it's dark. So the Flex Ride service will take you right to the door, and then it would be the reverse in the afternoon.
Would there be any way of using like an Uber or a Lyft to do part of that?
So we are trying to provide that type of service internal to Metro. Uber and Lyft are an option, and we might look in the future at partnerships for maybe a midday trip home if you need something, if your kid is sick or you get sick and you need to go home in the middle of the day. But we are actually planning to provide that service more cost effectively than Uber, at least for the employer. So as part of our
ADA.
Yes.
Yeah. The ADA issues with Uber and Lyft are they've gotten sued quite a few times, and so one of the things that I think Metro, all the RTAs are dealing with is if you partner with them, typically any fixed line service has to have ADA components to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if all your Lyft or Uber drivers do not have ADA, can't fit a wheelchair, et cetera, then technically they're not providing service that's protected by the federal government. Should be, and they could actually be sued. And
And all of our vehicles have lifts and are ADA accessible.
Right. So there's risks involved. Some RTAs have done it and haven't gotten sued. Some have done it and have gotten sued. It's a risk. Yeah, Valerie, please.
You're going to do this state of the system. We've got an onboard survey.
Yep.
Let's say a bus starts in Akron and follows a route and stops at every stop on its route, and somehow you know it picked up a passenger or it dropped off a passenger there?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you it keeps stopping at a stop and you only get one passenger a week there? Do you delete that stop? I mean, it's just not worth having it?
Sure. So another initiative that we didn't really talk about is, and the onboard survey will help with this analysis too, is looking at all of our stops throughout the system and doing what we're calling bus stop optimization. So sometimes yeah, there are benefits to having stops at every single block, like maybe a little shorter walk. But also, if there are a bunch of people on that bus and you're stopping at every single block and picking up one person, maybe it's better to have a kind of a center stop and five people are walking one more block to that stop rather than stopping each. So that'll be part of the next steps after the strategic plan.
Would your survey show their home address? In other words, that would let you show how far they're walking to get to that stop?
Yes, if they're willing to share it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. If they're willing to share.
And generally on the surveys, they do also ask the different modes of transportation that you use to get to the stop. So we should know how many folks walk to the stop versus drive to a park and ride or, you know, that kind of thing too. So they, assuming, yeah, my boss has fill out the form
right.
Well and give us as much information as possible.
Yeah.
So I noticed Dawn has been taking some of the Metro staff to on a route to a destination, which I think is a good thing. And I think at AMETS, we're going to probably try to attempt that with our staff to see if we could get on a route or use a couple different routes maybe to get to a destination and then get back. But my question was, I was out for a walk the other day and I noticed a pretty good amount of college students are using Metro bus to get back. And when I'm not talking about the Dash, I'm talking about actually one of the buses, for example, to get to Talmadge or to get to the Chapel Hill area, wherever they were going, North Hill. So I was just, I'm sure you have data, or the mobile app will provide more data, you know, the ages of who's using the bus line.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for me, I was pretty shocked at how many students were staying out there waiting for a specific Metro bus to come.
Yeah, we have really great partnerships with both Akron Public Schools and the University of Akron. And we're working on building a partnership with Stark State too in their new Akron campus on with the University of Akron and high school students at APS. They swipe their ID badge when they get on any Metro bus, and they, you know, through our partnership with those school systems, we fund that program. So to the student, they can swipe and ride any bus they want for free.
Okay. And the use of the public space over there by the new College of Business is pretty good too, because the students were using those tables and chairs. I don't know if
mm-hmm.
that was the university that did that, or
yes,
you guys did that.
Yep.
But it was a good use of their own. I'm trying.
You know how much that pocket park meant to me in front of St. Bernard's. You're rubbing it in my face. Two questions. One is, have all the Akron U buses, like, is that, have you totally served the Akron U's? Because I feel like I don't see the Rue buses. You know, you used to always see Zippy waving
mm-hmm.
at you from
mm-hmm.
the back of that bus. Have they, so they're still out there?
They're still out there. I believe they consolidated some routes or removed a route when the Dash was formed.
Yeah.
But they still have the Polsky Express, which takes them directly from main campus to the Polsky building.
Okay.
And a couple like shuttle and shopping routes that they have.
Maybe just because of the Dash, I don't see it anymore. But,
yeah.
And then my second question was actually on the mobile ticketing. Are you going to have access to the
all
data?
All your credit card information?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, really, in a way, you could argue that could be better than a onboard survey. I mean,
So there are, I guess, two steps to the mobile ticketing. The first right now, so we can test it out and see the usage, is just going to be visual validation. So the operator will look at it when you get on the bus and hit a button on the fare box. So the amount of data, if you have your location services turned on, we'll know where you activated your ticket with that. But you could activate
it. I guess I'm thinking like with, you could at least with the home addresses of a credit card.
Sure.
You could potentially have.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be.
Yeah, I think we have addresses in that. Yeah. So it's another data source.
Yeah.
And we are applying for a different grant through the state for validators so that there's a QR code on the ticket app as well. So instead of the operator validating it, you would just put the QR code on the reader and you could get a little more detailed information that way.
Big data at work.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's so much data.
So I see a lot of strategic planning around buses, and I understand that, and it all looks very good. Is there any strategic planning around your rail property?
Sure, yes. So just for, if anybody doesn't know, we have three rail lines that we own right now. We own property that goes from Akron to Canton, Akron to Kent, and Akron to Hudson, all of which kind of serve different purposes at the moment. The Akron to Kent line is a shared use path that the Summit Metro Parks operates along the rail corridor, next to the rail corridor, and the Akron to Canton line is, there's actually two freight operators that provide service along that line to different customers. And the Akron to Hudson line is really not being used for either of those now, but as we saw, being considered for trails. So the rail assets will definitely be considered through the strategic plan. They're kind of a larger and different, not larger, but a different animal than the rest of the bus service. So owning those assets is being considered during the strategic planning process, but there'll be a separate rail strategic plan happening at the same time.
And when might that plan be done?
That's a great question. Our board is interested in making a decision on the future of the rail lines. Stop touching this thing. So I would say that this strategic plan is the priority at the moment. I'm just talking and it's doing it. But the rail will follow shortly after or in tangent with, so at the beginning of the year, it'll probably be coming down to decision time for the board. So. Anybody else?
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to stick around for the rest of the...
Of course.
You know.
Yeah. Other big decisions being made.
No.
Oh.
No, I mean, unless, you know, I mean, that 104 is a bargaining chip. So.
I can vouch that Curtis has ruined it 2 times.
Yeah, ruined it twice. And then the school year started, and I
then our ridership quadrupled. Somehow you ruined it twice, and the ridership quadrupled.
Yeah, I've noticed it's a slow growth route, but there's lots of potential there. Okay, Daryl, do you want to maybe do the, just give a little update on the...
It's up to you. Do you want to let them go? And
now I lost
can
my...
Fill in,
I think we've got enough time. Why don't you just give a little update on the Kenmore stuff, and
okay.
Then
all right.
We can let... Oh, thank you. Task Force? Okay. But it's not TASK, right?
No.
It's just TSK?
TAC.
TAC.
TAC. Trail Advocates of Summit County, TAC.
Okay. It'll get embedded one day in my head. Yeah.
I just have really pictures that'll show some of the things that we've done. So at our last CIC meeting back in June, we talked about these items that we did for a bike and ped event. And so we just want to I'm going to run through real quick what we've done since then. So August 10th, we had a Hudson Trek and Bike. September 6th was the Kenmore Bike and Sip. September 14th, Pigeon Creek Trail, Walk and Talk. We had some project walks, bike rides, and we did the walking bus yesterday for the Safe Routes to School at Mason Community Center. So just some pictures to show you the Hudson trike and bike. I went to the event and coordinated with the manager of that event for us to come down. It was a great event. It certainly is a beautiful thing for kids to raise funds for children that have cancer. But as far as AMATS is concerned, and some more pictures here, but you know, I think it was a good event to be at, but I don't think it's something that we'll continue to do. There's a lot of these types of events around the area, but I certainly did have some good conversation with a lot of people, but I think it kind of stands alone as an event for that in itself. But it was good to be there and to pass out our bike maps and some of the swag that we have. The Kenmore Bike and Sip that we did on September 6th, was in conjunction with Kenmore's First Friday, which you'll see here in a second here on the next couple slides. But we had a pretty good turnout. Quite a bit of those people you see in the picture on the left, upper left. Unfortunately, our city staff, there's three officers there, if you can see them. So we had about four or five citizens that came out and rode the route. The route started on Kenmore Boulevard, came back through, we went Wilbeth Road, and we came back up on the towpath, the floating towpath trail, which you see here. There's the route you saw. I know you can't probably see that route, but that's our flyer there. But there's Todd Utter talking on the floating towpath over by Summit Lake. We stopped there for that conversation. So, but it was a good discussion, a good route for the first Friday. So the first, oh, some more pictures here. That was the pedestrian bridge that goes over one of the rail lines. We stopped to have a conversation about the route itself and some of the different areas that the trail can go through at that point. But it was part of the First Friday on the Boulevard, which is a really neat event that Kenmore Alliance Group puts on. You can see, you know, the group of people, and then you have a band playing there. I'm going to skip the video. The video really is just the event itself, walking down the boulevard. It was pretty amazing to see the amount of people that were there for that. And so our bike and sip was part of that. Actually, up there in the picture of the group of people, you can see that our sign hanging on the wall there for the bike and sip. We did the bike and sip part of it first, and then we were able to enjoy the festivities afterward. So it was really, really great event. Then we also were involved in the Copley Township Walk and Talk behind Dunkler's Farm. So what they did is they have this idea, and they cleared out the path that they want to construct and they want to build. They cleared that out, and they did almost like a better block on the trail on this part of the section on Dunkler's Farm. Some more pictures of the event. Unfortunately, that's not a very good picture, but I think providing this trail might also provide some awareness that some of these dams and things that are in these creeks also collect some of this plastic that is not a good thing for that to be sitting there. But the overall plan is, I'm going to step away here. So we were way out here in this section of it here, and they want to continue it from Copley Road all the way down eventually into Barberton, with this section being sort of the grand plan of a boardwalk through here, through the wetland area, and then these different types of trails back here that people can access and get to. So boardwalk looking like this in that middle section there over the wetland. So we had some project walks. I'm going to really breeze through these. AMAT staff were trying to get through some of the projects that are going on this year. We did a walk downtown, a Howe Avenue walk. That's my favorite picture up on the left because we look like that. We look pretty bad up there. We went down to Kent and heard all about Kent's vision, what they're doing. September 27th, next Friday, we're going to be not so much walking, but taking a tour of one of our projects over there on Cleveland Maslin Road in Norton. There's some current pictures of what's going on there, but you can see the curb going in. It's a widening project that they're hoping to be finished in January 2020. But you can see the curb that has gone in here on the right-hand side of the turning lane. The mayor of Akron did a walk. It was more of a fitness walk, which, I guess I'll just say that he's piggybacking onto the walks that we're doing, but I don't know for sure. But it, I thought it was very interesting. He was able to answer some of the questions that we had. We took some stops, and he pointed some things out. So more of that sort of getting that information out to people that work downtown. A lot of the people here are city staff. And you can see our planning director, Jason. Here's the mayor, of course. That's Jason Segedy back there. He was on the walk, which I thought was very informative. And I think we walked about a mile that day, a loop through downtown. We did some rides. Don't worry, Curtis. There's not a lot of pictures on here. Curtis Smith, myself, and Jim Bowen from Kent, we did some two rides, and you can see how many miles we rode. But here's some of the sites that we saw. Again, we actually went all the way up to Cleveland Metro Parks when we went from Stowe to Glen Willow. But you can see some of the sites that you see on these bike rides along the towpath. And Tom, who rode with us the second time, he made a very good comment that stuck with me, was that usually when you're in a car and you're going from point A to point B, you're probably not noticing some of the things that you're traveling by. And if you are, if you're a passenger in a car, you're noticing that stuff at 60 miles an hour, 35 miles an hour. But here, when you're on your bike, you seem to notice some of these sights a lot better, a lot more. And you can actually visualize and take that in, and in my case, take a picture. And I think it really gives you an idea how beautiful the area is traveling on. And I enjoyed these because I kind of compare these to golfing. You know, a lot of people tend to golf. That's where business takes place. But in this case, we're actually doing what we're practicing what we preach, and we're getting out there. We're riding on the bike lanes on the roads and the trails and going from one point to another. So I think it's a great thing. And we hope to do that again here, and you'll see in the next slides.
Fred, I've never wanted an e-bike more than riding through Bedford.
It's legal in the national park now.
Yeah. I mean, that Bedford reservation, it was just, and then we turned on the Richmond Road, and it was like, Richmond goes down and up, and it was like, oh my God. Meanwhile, Daryl's just, you know, pedaling around like it's easy, and I'm just wishing I had an e-bike.
They'll be for rent, Century Cycle.
Oh, really? They'll rent them? That's awesome. Great.
Does Blimp
City has it set. I haven't heard anything about that.
Just because they're right there. So yesterday we did a walk-in school bus at Mason Community Learning Center. The idea of just getting the kids off the bus, especially if they're really close to school, getting them to walk and experience that part of it. So I had route 745, the pink one here, so we stood there and waited. We got two kids to come out and to walk with us to the school. Again, we also have walk-in rolls during the school year, but this is the first time we were able to implement the walk-in school bus idea in Akron. So, as I mentioned, we're looking to do some transit days where we hop on the Metro bus and get to a place, a destination, as well as part of it. We're going to try to jump from one to the other so that we can get out. The idea of not driving to Orange County to pick up part of it, hop on, get to the center and go from there. So we're hoping to do that. And next year you can see some of the things that we have that we'd like to do more of. So, and that's really about all I had. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
On the walking school buses, were you designated? I'm like, I don't know if I would send my kids out and be like, look for a stranger out there with a sign. Like, how is that coordinated?
Well, discuss
this. Talk to strangers, but you can walk with them to school.
Yes, it was very much so, you know, the information was given out to all the students, and they certainly did a good job in designating that we were out there. We had a flag, and we had the one other person that was with me had a vest on. And again, we understood that there was an element to that that maybe some parents wouldn't feel comfortable enough to let them go. But certainly, parents were encouraged to walk with us if they had that. So, the idea of just getting out, I mean, and just to give you the idea, I mean, you're not talking about, it's not even half a mile, I don't think. I mean, it's maybe less than a quarter of a mile. Here to the school. And certainly there's a crosswalk and a crossing guard here at Exchange Street. But all of these two then coming together here, the 750, the 750, you know, we're all coming in together. Unfortunately, the turnout yesterday wasn't that great, but I guess down here they got a pretty good turnout, about 6 or 8 kids. Just to experience that.
What age group for the students?
Primary, so you're talking...
So first to sixth grade?
Yeah.
So you're saying the bus could stop a block away from the school, driver could say, everybody's out, you're walking up this block to the crossing guard, you're going to school. Everybody out.
You could, yeah. The idea being that they wouldn't have to use the bus, or that at the very least, if they walk normally, that we'd all walk as a group.
As a group, yeah. Huh.
But it's a kind of an idea that, like I say, it's the first time that it's happened. It's going to happen every Wednesday. Every Wednesday till October, through October. So yesterday and then through October 30th, every Wednesday, we'll do that. I think things pick up after people start to see how it works. Same thing with the walk and roll. We're encouraging students to walk and to ride their bike or to skateboard or to hoverboard their way over to the schools. And I think first couple days people are a little standoffish, they're not really sure how that works. And then by Thursday, kids are coming. So it's a pretty big, neat concept. And then today, too, was National Fathers Walk Day. Kids at school day.
I can see that if you, I'm thinking of specifically Broad Boulevard and 23rd Street in Cuyahoga Falls. The bus has to go up 23rd Street, stop, go up past the Richardson School, make a turn to come in to drop everybody off in front of the school. All right. And then the bus pulls out empty to go on wherever. But if he were to come along Broad, everybody gets out and they have to walk up that one block. They're walking uphill. That's good. That would free up the bus 10 minutes faster for the next route? I don't know. I mean, you're getting a benefit for the kid's physical being to walk to school. You know, I'm sure you tell your kids you walked uphill through the snow both ways. You know. Yeah. So, that's a good idea. If they went as a group, they would all... If they get to 23rd and other street, there's crossing guards there. So if they're only walking from that one corner up to the other corner, I can see where there would be a benefit for the student and bus
well,
schedule.
Get some hair on their chest. So.
For those of us who have hair.
Do you coordinate with the schools? Do the teachers go along with this? The principals and all that?
Yes. And unfortunately, the only safe routes to school committee that I sit on is at Akron Public Schools. So there's a committee made up of Summer County Public Health, myself. Akron Children's Hospital has two representatives that sit on this committee, and a representative from the Akron Public Schools. And that committee really does a good job in creating these events for that. And unfortunately, in the AMATS area, that's the only group that I know of.
Hudson does have one.
It does have a committee.
Yeah.
And the one for Akron meets monthly.
One day.
It's a one day.
Yeah,
but there's like still some organization.
Yeah.
Isn't that day coming up, too?
Yeah. It's like next week or something.
So I think a lot of communities have a safe routes to school plan.
Yeah.
Although not as many as we thought. There's only like 5 or 6 districts that have actually taken advantage of it, which seems silly because it's, you know, the state has the funding to do these plans, and all it takes is a willing school district, and we're not getting the participation that I think we thought we were getting.
Well, that was my question. I don't think their schools have any real incentive to do that, do they? Other than, you know, the health of the kids.
Yeah.
As a parent, you get bombarded with, you know, 30 emails a day from different, you know, teachers and different things. It's like, I think probably, honestly, the word gets out, but it's kind of like it just is, and it's kind of like junk mail. You know, you get all this like, I don't even know what to do with that. How am I going to remember what day that is? I have to remember to send a cello to school, and do, you know, like, so many things.
But don't you have the problem that in so many, even in Akron, you don't have a clear path for kids to walk or to ride a bike to school? So you can only have selected areas within a school area district that they can use for a safe route.
Yeah. I think that's those routes and other routes to create safer ways to get to school.
if they wanted to. But nowadays, it seems like parents are apt to drive. In fact, that did happen. And someone was, as we were walking, they lived right here, drove their kids to school.
Yeah, I just think, too, in the last, I mean, I'm sure in the last 75 years, but even in the last 20 to 25 years, I think that, like, diameter around the school where it's seen to be acceptable for walking has just continued to shrink. I mean, because we used to walk, my brother and I walked when we were in kindergarten and second grade, walked a mile and a half. I mean, but that was just what we did.
Just 10 miles.
You guys had to crawl. I mean, there's no walking. But it just seems like now, even as a parent too, it's like we keep restricting our own, what we think is safe. And it's I know there's a couple of, you know, national speakers that speak on those topics. I think Mark Fenton's one of them that's saying, you know, this, we've created these overarching fears that have now overtaken the rational thought. And so that's a concern, you know. And so I think part of this program is to, you know, the buses or the walking buses and everything is to try to say, you know, it's okay, especially for like 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Yeah, and they're going as a group. They're not going individually. They're going as a group up to school.
Well, you bring that up, but if what my parents allowed me to do to go to school would happen now, they'd be put in jail.
Yeah. Well, my mom always talks about, you know, they lived in Maple Heights, and she would take, her and her sister would get on the bus, go to an Indians game, get on the bus and come home. Can you, I mean,
nope.
She'd be in third grade, you know, like, I can't even imagine.
I used to ride the L downtown in Chicago when I was the beginning of high school.
Yeah. And I don't know how that, you know, I mean, that's like more, that's definitely more psychology and sociology, but like, how does that happen? It's just like we've gotten more and more.
Oh, the Ohio Erie Canal is going to have a biking route out of Zora here in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Biking's optional.
The laws don't talk about drunken bike riders. I don't see anything because they can't take your license away. You don't have one.
Yeah.
All
right.
Okay, so we are Task Force, TASC, Trail Advocates of Sumner County, capital letters. The force is a subscript, which is tries to suggest how dedicated we are to this and how hard we're going to work to make it happen. So we came here in May and gave a presentation to this venue. What I'll give you today is just a very brief update on what we've done since May. A little background on the introduction. We are a new nonprofit volunteer organization started in April of this year. Our initial goal is to build public support for a new multi-purpose trail in Sumner County known as the Veterans Trail. The trail will run on Mallory's abandoned rail line called the Akron Second Rail Line, owned by Metro RTA. It's only 12.2 miles from Hudson to Akron on that line, so a good rider can do that easily in under an hour. And an e-bike.
Yeah, that's right. If I get a class 3, right, I can really do it quick.
You get a ticket.
Yeah.
But it goes through some heavily populated areas, starting in the south in Akron, not too far of the falls, Silver Lake, Stone, and Hudson. And even though it's in heavily populated areas, there are sections of it that are very secluded. My son and I went and photographed the section starting at Front Street in Cuyahoga Falls, over the bridge and down along the river. That half mile stretch there is just beautiful. And it's just all trees and hobo camps right now. So if a trail were built there, I could see, you know, park benches and picnic tables and overlooks, and it would be like a park set.
Did you see a lot of hobo camps?
A couple.
Mm-hmm.
I have some pictures.
Yeah.
Made me a little worried that we're going to surprise somebody.
Yeah.
So we gave a presentation on this on May 9th. And this will be an update. There's three categories that I'll break this update into. The first is reaching out to community officials. or she actually recommended that we involve the communities along the way for this to be a success. So we've taken that to heart, and Bill Seeker and myself, co-directors, we've been reviewing the opportunity presented by this trail with city councils and engineering departments in all five cities along the way. So, park boards, city engineers, planning directors, whoever we can get a hold of, we've gone to all five cities. In Akron, we've only met with the city engineer, so we need to circle back and start reaching out to city council people there. But we are going to do that. In all of those meetings, we get strong feedback, positive feedback from the communities. Comments like, there's nothing bad about this. It's all good. It's what people want to see. It's a positive thing for our community. We haven't gotten any pushback from anything. And we've learned a lot about their plans, such as Stowe submitting this request, Hudson's plans. In Akron, we didn't know about the River City Heritage Trail until we talked to them, but we've been very excited because just a mile down from where the Veterans Trail would end on Metro Archway property, and we're going to build some pipelines along Arlington Road and connect to River City. So I used to go to Goodyear. I could ride down there and go way over to Goodyear. It'd be awesome. And we've been requesting that these city officials write letters of support for the Veterans Trail to both Metro RTA and to some of Metro Parks.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes. Please make final selections. Thank you.
I would prefer for that not to be a literal 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah. You got two resolutions to pass.
So, yeah, we're requesting these letters of support. we're going to keep doing that. Second thing we've been doing, we've been putting infrastructure in place for our organization. We recognize that this is going to take a long time, so we're putting into place infrastructure that will sustain this for as long as it needs to be. To date, we have designed a logo for task force branding. I'll show you that on the last slide. We've registered as a nonprofit LLC in the state of Ohio, so we are a task force LLC. We filed for an employer identification number with our good friends at the IRS. Give us a number. That allowed us to open a business banking account with credit cards that we can use for online purchases and printing and whatever else we can do.
We're all going to get hats.
Right. So you can remember how to spell it.
That's right, so I can remember how to spell it.
We registered for the domain name, taskforce.org, and we've been granted that name, so we're official there. And we've started building a website. It's maybe 60-70% in place. You could go there and see it. It's still a little rough, but by next week, I think. Including a button that will allow you to donate to our organization, so if you want to make a donation, put your credit card information. We're also considering filing for a 501c3 nonprofit status, but we haven't actually done that. Then the third area that we're working on is reaching out to individual trail users. This is the newest area of activity. We've developed an informational flyer. I have some here. You can all. It summarizes the information about the trail and what needs to be done and how people can help. We're going to pass that out at events. We think we're going to buy some display cases and put it in places like Eddie's Bike or Starbucks Coffee, or anybody that will allow us to sort of display on their counter. People can pick this up, it'll direct them to the website, and they can go onto the website and sign a petition showing that they support this trail. The The first event that we're going to attend is on Sunday. We are co-sponsors with the Ohio Engineering Canal Coalition of the Towpath 50 event. So we're going to have a booth there, about a nice band that can go across the front of the table. We'll be passing out these informational brochures and directing people to the website. And actually, there's one more area that's come up since we wrote this presentation. Next week, we're going to start visiting Rotary Clubs, Kiwanis organizations. We have a meeting with Clock Tower Rotary in Hudson next week. So we'll be presenting this to community action groups. So there's our logo. I sent my son to college to be a graphic designer. It comes in handy every once in a while. That logo probably cost me $100,000.
Yeah.
It's worth every penny. We thank you for the opportunity to give this update, and we would truly welcome any suggestions you can make about how Task Force can help facilitate this trail.
I know it's, obviously you're focused on the trail, but do you have any thoughts about expansion? I mean, in terms of, if the trail is successful, we start to build it, things like that, do you think this could become more of a larger advocacy group for other trails?
Well,
you're putting a lot of front-end effort into it, which I think is impressive.
So we met with Dan Rice mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, and he talked, he showed us the big grand plan for Summit County mm-hmm. Trails. And,
yeah.
Basically, he opened our minds to the whole idea yeah. of, the connectivity of all these trails. A friend of mine just recently in Facebook sent a link about Carmel, Indiana, and I did some investigating. Carmel, Indiana has got an unbelievable web of trails. I'm trying to compare Carmel to Summit County in terms of size, population, Seems like they've figured out a way to fund their trails. I'm not sure how. I'd love to connect with the gentleman on their website and find out more about it.
And then,
if I could comment on that too, we are not just focusing on Veterans Trail. That's our initial focus.
Right.
But we named the organization Trail Advocates of Summit mm-hmm. County, so we didn't say just bike trails or off road trails or anything like that. Any kind of trail in Summit County is our scope.
And then are you guys, not so much even for the purpose of cooperating, but if you're not familiar with Wayne County Rails Trails, they are basically a grassroots organization that has now successfully built, about six miles of trail, a countywide trail west of Rittman. And just finished, they're having a ribbon cutting on Monday for 2.4 miles from Orville to Marshallville. And, for a small organization, they had the opportunity to buy the rail like Metro did. They bought the rail as a Rails to Trails organization, and they just finished another 2.4 miles that they built with some help from the village of city of Orville. I'm not sure if it's over 5,000 or not. City of Orville, let's say. And they've been really good, more from that grassroots of being able to actually build. It might be worth, I can send you some contact info, but I just have met with them recently, and I've been, because we cover a piece of Wayne County, and so we were talking about where their trail ends now is about where our area starts, and so we're interested getting with them to maybe get the trail all the way to Clinton in Summit County. But what they've done on their own on a very small budget is pretty, with a few partners, like they partnered with Smuckers to help get money, so finding a couple of those partners have been really successful. So they were able to get a grant from, I think it was Clean Ohio Recreational, and then the rest of it, they're fundraising. They raise hundreds of thousands of dollars through just private funds, which just really impressed me, because I'm more used to the, or, you know, like Wayne County, I didn't even know, doesn't have a metro park or doesn't have a parks system. But so Rails and Trails, this Wayne County Rails and Trails kind of stepped in. And I'm more used to sort of Portage Parks District or Metro Parks, some of the Metro Parks. And it was just interesting to see what they could do without sort of that, the benefit of money in the coffer, basically, or a tax or anything. So
we'd be happy to talk to them.
Yeah.
Every time we give the presentation about this, somebody says, oh, do you know about so-and-so? It all starts to link together.
Yeah. Well, it's just the way you're talking, and I think the grassroots part of it, and the, you know, talking to Rotary clubs and the, got me thinking about how they were fundraising and working, and I think it would be something that it would be beneficial for both of you. So I'll send that along.
Perfect.
But that's really impressive. I mean, for, you know, that you've reached out to that many government officials and gotten FaceTime with them and gotten a lot of support. I think that's great.
This is our retirement job.
Yeah.
It keeps us busy.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any, so now I guess Bill, open, or the climate thing?
Yeah. All right, so this is off the internet, potential climate change impacts on our roads. University of New Hampshire can extend life, found a way to extend life cycle of pavements, keeping down future costs. Increasing the thickness of asphalt on certain roads. As one way to do that, they cite a report. Just like an oil change can extend the life of your cars, research shows regular maintenance, like increasing asphalt layer thickness on some roads. Now that's more cost.
May I have your attention, please?
Or when you
the library will close in 10 minutes. Please check out your materials now.
So anyway, the thicker roads protects them from further damage related to climate change. And I was thinking about this thing. What's the one going into East Texas right now? Umberto or something like tropical storm?
Imelda.
And you see a guy walking down a main street in a town, and he's up to his kneecaps in water. And I'm thinking, well, that's bad on the road. You know, I mean, that's really going to be affecting the road and the subgrade. And it's going to sit there a while and soak into that road. So they also conclude by saying winter pavement season may end as early as mid-century, just be replaced with a longer autumn season, and spring and summer pavement damage is projected to be more distributed throughout the entire year. So that for planning purposes and getting money from the cities and the towns saying, you got to fix them or make them better. End of report.
Thank you, sir.
All right. As long as we're talking about pavement, Truxell Road is repaved, and it's got it's sort of a chip and seal type thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any lines on it. It's not marked. It's just left.
It's just through the park?
It's from...
From state?
From state all the way down.
I assume that would be a county engineer job. But
I assume it is, too. That's why I'm questioning it.
I'll see if I can find anything out.
Type of a surface that they put on there?
Potentially, but even with that, well, no, they probably wouldn't think that. But they are getting more conservative with how they're not just milling, putting in drainages and how they're going to the side of
the road. There's always no edge lines or anything. Yeah, it just falls off.
If you write that to me in an email, then I can say, hey, I got a public question. Can you help me answer this?
People grab the road.
Do you guys have anything that says the number of miles of county road that's maintained by the county?
Not readily available, but I'm assuming we could get it.
I'm kind of curious to go along and look at that and see how well that road compares for bicycling or whatever, you know, to anything in any of the other cities. Because I think it's an
Might be right.